Year of Grace, or the Ulster Revival of 1859. Preface. In the month of November last, I was solicited on the part of an eminent publishing firm in Boston to draw up a narrative of the Ulster Revival for the American Christian public. The application was sustained by such representations that I did not feel justified in declining it. Although conversant, from personal observation, with that great spiritual movement which about 12 months ago began to attract toward the north of Ireland the earnest sympathies of Christendom, I resolved to furnish myself with every available information from other quarters in the execution of the responsible and arduous trust. My official connection with one leading section of the Protestant community gave me peculiar facilities of access to its ministers and people, and I soon found, as a result of the extensive correspondence I maintained upon the subject, that materials were at my disposal sufficient to warrant the conviction that a record might be produced which, under the divine blessing, might prove of abiding interest and value on both sides of the Atlantic. Hence this contemporaneous issue in the Old World and the New. Although the preparation of such a narrative may seem to some, as it did in the first instance to myself, to have been somewhat premature, I cannot but express my satisfaction that I was led to undertake the task. The sources on which I have drawn are of the most authentic kind, and had not the esteemed friends who have supplied so many contributions been urged to it by personal solicitation, and when the details in all their vividness were full in view, a vast amount of the most valuable information might otherwise have been altogether lost. It will be observed that, to a large extent, I have allowed my correspondents to narrate the movement as they witnessed it. This I have deemed as due alike to them and to the interests of the narrative itself, which thus gains in freshness what it may occasionally lose in continuity. With the exception of an occasional incident or illustration gathered elsewhere, the sum total of which would not occupy two sheets of letterpress, the manner of the entire volume is original. For the reason already indicated, by much the larger portion is occupied with the rise and progress of the revival in the Presbyterian Church. Under any circumstances, however, this had been unavoidable. The impartial historian of whatever name will acknowledge that while all the evangelical communities of Ulster were watered by the gracious grace that fell upon the pastors of the wilderness, the Scotch-Irish soil received in amplest measure the shower of blessing. At the same time, I trust the work has been viewed from no sectarian standpoint, but from the broad platform of a Catholic Christianity. To the statistical department given in the appendix, I may take leave to refer as one of the most distinctive features of the present publication. The results of the movement in that respect, as in every other, cannot but enhance our admiration of the marvelous grace displayed in this great work of God. Belfast, May 10th, 1860. Chapter 1. The Scene of the Revival. The Ulster Plantation. It is now 250 years since a new era, civil and religious, dawned on Ulster. The intestine tumults by which our northern province had unhappily been distinguished had sunk to rest, and the estates of the rebel chiefs which had been forfeited to the British crown had begun to be occupied by that enterprising and hardy race in whose hands they were destined ere long to become one of the fairest portions of the kingdom. Although the early colonists were, for the most part, actuated by a spirit of wild adventure, and had nothing less at heart than the interests of vital godliness, they speedily assumed the aspect of an industrious and orderly community, while the course of providential events, which had brought them to their new abode, was soon after followed by others of more than ordinary significance in their bearing on the spiritual destinies of their adopted country. The British monarch, who was the leading instrument in the Ulster Plantation, by which the foundations of the social edifice were so securely laid in this part of his dominions, was at the same time the abettor of a policy which was attended by the most disastrous results, alike to liberty and religion, in other portions of the kingdom. at the very period when the lands of the revolted earls were passing into the occupancy of their future cultivators, the hand of persecution was lifted up, under royal sanction on our Scottish forefathers, while of the Puritans in England a faithful band had left their native shores soon after to plant in the virgin soil of a new continent those sacred principles which, wherever they are germinant, are the truest seeds of empire. Ireland, then little known or regarded as the seat of power, and not yet recovered from the effects of the late contentions, might with impunity afford a shelter to the expatriated for conscience' sake, and there a few of them repaired and enjoyed for a season a safe asylum under the shadow of the Almighty. Of the first seven ministers who settled in the country, five were from Scotland and two from England. The earliest arrival was in 1613, as scarcely had they set foot in Ulster when they began to labor with apostolic earnestness. And though beset with many difficulties, they were favored with an extraordinary, if not unprecedented, measure of success. Of one of them, Blair, it is recorded by a contemporary, he was a man of notable constitution, both of body and mind, of a majestic, awful, yet affable and amiable countenance and carriage, thoroughly learned, of strong parts, deep invention, solid judgment, and a most public spirit for God. His gift of preaching was such that seldom could any observe withdrawing of assistance in public, which in others is frequent. He seldom ever wanted assurance of his salvation. He spent many days and nights in prayer alone and with others, and was vouchsafed great intimacy with God. The others were of like precious faith, and imbued with a kindred ardor for the evangelization of the land to which their steps had been directed in his time of need. Nor was it long until a signal blessing rested visibly upon their labors. Not only did a marked improvement manifest itself in the entire habits and demeanor of the people, but a spirit of intense religious earnestness began to be evinced, which issued in one of the most remarkable awakenings recorded in the annals of the Christian Church. It was on this wise that it originated. Mr. James Glendinning, one of the least gifted of the newly arrived ministers, and who had been advised by Blair to remove from Carrickfergus, where he had been settled, to some less conspicuous sphere, had acted upon the fraternal council, and was appointed to the charge of a rural congregation at Oldstone, near the town of Antrim. He was a man, says the narrator of the period, who never would have been chosen by a wise assembly of ministers, nor sent to begin a reformation in this land. Yet this was the Lord's choice, to begin with him the admirable work of God, which I mention on purpose, that all may see how the glory is only the Lord's in making a holy nation in this profane land, and that it was not by might, nor by power, nor by man's wisdom, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord. At Oldstone, God made use of him to awaken the consciences of a lewd and secure people thereabouts. Foreseeing the great lewdness and ungodly sinfulness of the people, he preached nothing to them but law, wrath, and the terrors of God for sin. And in very deed for this only was he fitted, for hardly could he preach any other thing. But behold the success, for the hearers, finding themselves condemned by the mouth of God speaking in his word, fell into such anxiety and terror of conscience that they looked on themselves as altogether lost and damned. And this work appeared not in a single person or two, but multitudes were brought to understand their way and cry out, "Men and brethren, what shall we do to be saved?" I have seen them myself stricken into a swoon with the word, yea, a dozen in one day carried out of doors as dead, so marvelous was the power of God, smiting their hearts for sin, condemning, and killing. And of these were none of the weaker sex or spirit, but indeed some of the boldest spirits who formerly feared not with their swords to put a whole market town into a fray, yet, in offense of their stubbornness, didn't care to lie in prison in the stocks, and being incorrigible were as ready to do the like the next day. I have heard one of them, then a mighty strong man, now a mighty Christian, say that his end in coming into church was to consult with his companions how to work some mischief. And at one of those sermons was he so caught up that he was fully subdued. But why do I speak of him? We knew and yet know multitudes of such men who sinned and still gloried in it, because they feared no man, yet are now patterns of sobriety, fearing sin because they fear God. And it spread through the country to admiration, especially about that river commonly called the Six Mile Water. For there this work began at first, aroused by the movement that was going on around them, and which had already extended to their own parishes. The neighboring ministers came to the help of their weak brother, and concerted measures for the superintendence and extension of the work which had been so auspiciously begun. About the year 1626, accordingly, a monthly concert for prayer was instituted in Antrim, to which the brethren, both lay and clerical, repaired for mutual conference, consulting in the words of Livingston, the John Livingston of the Church of Shotts, about such things as concern the carrying on of the work of God. In those meetings among ourselves, he adds, are sometimes as profitable as either presbyteries or synods. Such as laid religion to heart used to come into those meetings, especially out of the Six-Mile Water Valley, which was nearest to hand, and there was the greatest number of religious people, and frequently the Sabbath after the Friday's meeting, the communion was celebrated in one or other of our parishes. Among all the ministers there was never any jar or jealousy, yea, nor amongst the professors, the greatest number of them being Scots, and some good number of very gracious English, all whose contention was to prefer others to themselves. Many of those religious professors had been both ignorant and profane, and for debt and want and worse causes had left Scotland. Yet the Lord was pleased by his word to work such a change that I do not think there were more lively and experienced Christians anywhere than were at this time in Ireland. I have known them come several miles from their own houses to communions, to the Saturday's sermon, and spending the whole Saturday's night in several companies, sometimes a minister being with them and sometimes themselves alone in conference and prayer. They have then waited on the public ordinances the whole Sabbath and spent the Sabbath night in the same way, and yet at the Monday sermon were not troubled with sleepiness, and so they have not slept until they went home. To the same purpose as the statement of Blair, who also testifies to the widespread character of the awakening. The blessed work of conversion, which was of several years' continuance, spread beyond the bounds of Down and Antrim to the skirts of neighboring counties, and the resort of people to the monthly meeting and communion occasions, and the appetite of the people were become so great that we were sometimes constrained in sympathy with them to venture beyond any preparation we had made for the occasion. And indeed, preaching and praying were so pleasant in those days, and here so eager and greedy, that no day was long enough nor any room large enough to answer their strong desires and large expectations. The wonderful success by which the labors of the Ulster ministers were attended is also thus attested by another witness. I shall here instance, says Fleming in his Fulfilling of Scripture, that great and solemn work of God which was in the Church of Ireland some years before the fall of prelacy, about the year 1628 and some years thereafter, which as many grave and solid Christians yet alive can witness who were then present, was a bright and hot sunblink of the gospel. Yea, may with sobriety be said to have been one of the largest manifestations of the Spirit, and of the most solemn times of the downpouring of it, that almost since the days of the apostles has been seen. Then it was sweet and easy for Christians to come 30 or 40 miles to the solemn communions which they had, and there continue from the time they came until they returned, without wearying or making use of sleep, yea, but little either meat or drink. And if some of them professed to not feel the need of it, but went away most fresh and vigorous, their souls so filled with the sense of God. Such was the character of the revival which at that crisis of its history so extensively wrought in Ulster, taming the lawlessness of the early settlers and transforming them into a race of sober and God-fearing men. The gracious rain descended on the pastures of the wilderness, and the thirsty land became springs of water. The fruits of that sowing have ever since been gathered in the soil into which the precious seed was cast in tears. Uncongenial in climate as compared with the other provinces in Ireland, Ulster has maintained its preeminence in all the elements of industrial and moral superiority, And though in the retrospect of its religious condition there is much deadness and formality, and even false doctrine, over which to mourn, it is impossible to avoid associating with the prayerful labors of the fathers the blessings that have since descended on the children. It is peculiarly interesting to mark that in the neighborhood of the very scenes once hallowed by the pious communings of the saints, a work has had its rise in the past year not inferior in interest and importance to any, even the most striking manifestations of the Spirit of God that have been witnessed since the Pentecostal period itself. But 50 years ago, the cause of evangelical religion stood very low in Ulster. A general indifference and deadness reigned throughout the Protestant churches. Though the goodly vine which had been planted in the 17th century has struck its roots into the place prepared for it of God, and spread its branches over the land, it suffered under a withering blight, and was to a lamentable extent shorn of its foliage and fruitfulness. Yet was it not forgotten by the heavenly husbandman? And now, after having stood the shock of many a tempest, it has been graciously revisited by the genial influences of the Son of Righteousness, and multitudes are rejoicing in its pleasant fruits. It is well known that the natives of the north of Ireland bear upon them in their intellectual features the stamp of their Scottish ancestry. Unlike the Milesian Irish of the south and west, they are a shrewd, calculating, and eminently practical people. The only period in their history when some were carried away by violent excitement was at the rising of 1798, but even then the impulses to which they yielded were those of genuine, though mistaken, patriotism. Superior in education to the generality of their fellow countrymen, and abjuring the superstitions by which the majority are enslaved, they have ever had a keen appreciation of the strong points of the argument for Protestantism. And as often as a controversial disputation has arisen between the champions of the respective systems, they have looked on with eager interest and have not failed to honor and reward the victors. The delusions under the guise of religion, by which the popular mind in England has sometimes been taken captive, had no charm for them, their strong sense and logical discrimination being proof against the impostures of pretenders and the fervors of enthusiasts. The last half century especially has made them more than usually familiar with theological discussion. Questions have from time to time been agitated which have been invested with an intense polemic interest. Of these, by far the most exciting was that which constituted the occasion of stormy controversy between 30 and 40 years ago in one of the great sections of Ulster, Presbyterianism issuing in its deliverance from the incubus of Unitarianism and its consolidation on the broad basis of Orthodox Christianity. Others of lesser interest still remain to exercise the practiced dialects of the people, the respective claims of the Calvinistic and Arminian systems, and the old unsettled account between presbytery and prelacy ever and again presented themselves as topics of debate, not seldom of alienation and personal antagonism between the leading disputants. It will thus be perceived that the religious feeling of the North partook rather of that excitement which is generated in the heats of controversy than of that vital warmth and glow which are the product to spiritual life. The reality being sadly wanting, it was not to be wondered at that indifference and formality extensively prevailed. True indeed, there were none of those criminal outbreaks of lawless violence so often witnessed in other parts of Ireland, but many forms of evil had existence in the community, not infrequently in connection with a religious profession, and under the very shadow of the sanctuary. Foremost among all these, and parent of most of them, was intemperance. At fairs and markets, sometimes even at funerals, the whiskey demon held its horrid carnival, while party brawls and battles mingled with fearful yells and imprecations often closed the scene. Of the prevalent deadness in many, even in the most favored parts of the country where no flagrant immorality existed, the following statement with respect to his own congregation previous to the revival by the Reverend G.H. Shanks may be taken as a faithful representation. "This congregation before the revival was in a most unsatisfactory state. is to religion. The people were not immoral, nor without a religious profession, but Laodiceanism characterized them. From my first entrance on the work of the ministry, I believed that the faithful use of the means of grace should be followed by their appropriate effects. It certainly is the tillage of a field is followed by a crop. There is diligence in any profession is rewarded with success. And bitter, therefore, was my disappointment as year after year passed and still no fruit appeared. In grief, I wondered at what I considered a mysterious withholding of the Spirit and set myself to account for it. What alarmed me most was the disinclination, almost hostility, of the people to hold prayer meetings. They appeared for the most part as if they thought they were well enough, and that I was unnecessarily disturbing them and drawing them off from their necessary industrial pursuits, so that I was led at times to think and to say that they had a greater desire to win half a crown than for all that God could do for their souls. Some whom I had never seen at a prayer meeting, and who would have said that they had not time to attend for a couple of hours once a month, have, since the revival commenced, attended often twice daily, in some instances with three or four sons during the best working hours of the summer day. I knew there were always a few, very few I feared, praying persons in the several congregations in the neighborhood, and there were always attempts made to keep up prayer meetings in my own. But up to the very week of the bursting forth of the revival, there appeared no general desire nor felt need for such a thing, nor symptoms of its approach, except that the Sabbath school had been gradually increasing and attendance on public worship improving a little, and perhaps one or two individuals mourning over the general deadness. I had never been more dispirited and distressed than during some weeks immediately preceding the rushing mighty wind, which so suddenly and gloriously came in upon us, vitalizing the dead mass. The intelligence of revival in America and even in the parishes of Antrim and in Belfast seemed to produce little impression or excite desire. They appeared incredulous and unmoved. I had nearly begun to cease hoping. I felt as if I were almost quite alone, no one mourning or praying with me. I told them that I was appalled at their apparent determination to have no prayer meetings and to seek no revival, that the showers were going round and round us and not a drop falling our way, and that we would be left utterly reprobate, a visible monument of the consequences of despising gospel privileges. I reminded them that any little good which had ever come to my knowledge as having been done to souls through my ministry was nearly all in connection with persons not belonging to my congregation. And I asked, what could this mean except that God had given over my people to a hardened and reprobate mind? End quote. The following statement by the Reverend J. A. Canning of Coleraine in regard to the religious aspects of that town and neighborhood prior to the awakening may be regarded as not less applicable to many other districts of Ulster. Quote, the great mass of the inhabitants of the city and of the surrounding country are of a Scottish extraction and are members of the Presbyterian Church. For centuries, the gospel has been faithfully preached among a thoughtful, industrious, intelligent, and well-educated people. Church-going habits have ever characterized the inhabitants of town and country. The observance of the Sabbath and attendance upon Sabbath ordinances have long been a marked characteristic of the people. The doctrines of the Westminster Confession of Faith have from olden time been preached by ministers and held by their flocks. There is no Unitarian congregation in the wide district of which Coleraine is the business center and capital. The Pusseyism of the Episcopal Church has never found favor among the ministers and members of this establishment. There are wide districts in which there are almost no Roman Catholics. Sabbath schools are everywhere established, and the religious training of the young is a rule and not the exception. Coleraine is the seat of a large presbytery, and in the churches of which it has the oversight, the ordinance of the Lord's Supper is observed twice in the year. The population of the city may amount to between 8,000 and 9,000. The staple manufacturer of the locality is that of linen, for which it is long celebrated, and the whole district is comparatively a rich one. In disposition and temperament, the people are calm, thoughtful, and far from impulsive, and their habits, amusements, and usages strongly indicate their Scotch descent. Among such a people thus circumstanced, the organization of Christ's Church has for many years been very complete. Church courts have been vigilant, ordinances have been regular and faithfully dispensed, and nothing seemed lacking but a power to bring home an offered gospel to the hearts and souls of the people. Some of God's children have therefore been saying of late years that one of two things was likely soon to occur, namely, either that gospel doctrine preached by ministers and professed by the people, but apparently without much life, would, like everything which becomes stagnant, sink into putrefaction, and that heresy would supplant the truth, or that a gracious God would honor his own truth by supplying the power of the Spirit to impart to it a vivifying energy. That God has been pleased to shed abroad this power, the wondrous awakening which has characterized the history of the summer and autumn of 1859, abundantly proves, end quote. Such, then, was the state of things immediately preceding the wonderful manifestation of divine grace which is to be recorded in the following pages. Such were the leading aspects in the population of Ulster, a population, as it has been well said, trained to reason, warm in party and cold in religion, among whom capital crime was rare, true piety equally so, religious fervor dreaded and fanaticism unknown, whose wanderings has been towards Unitarianism, not enthusiasm, and whose wills are remarkably unyielding, end quote, end of chapter 1.